The following program is being brought to you on the Voice America Empowerment Channel. For more information about our network and to check out additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericaempowerment.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.
Welcome to From the Boardroom to the Bedroom, the Protocol Praxis, with your host, Suzanne Z. Pedro. This program will catapult your awareness in the mastery of power, influence, and persuasion. Journey to the uncharted conversations of human interactions and discover your winning capital. Now, from the boardroom to the bedroom with Suzanne Z. Pedro.
Hey, everybody. Right now, are you feeling a slump, an afternoon slump? Getting ready to feel like you just need to reach out to get your energy back? Well, put down that chocolate. And even before you even take another bite of something healthy like banana, you need to know where that food comes from is empowering, and you can empower other people. It gives us energy to live. But unfortunately, what we choose to eat can sometimes not only hurt ourselves, but others. So this week, my guest, Lauren Ornelius, who is the founder and executive director of the Food Empowerment Project, known as FEP. With her vast experience and knowledge, she seeks to create a more just and sustainable world, which is so important, by recognizing the power of our food choices. And not only that, by encouraging the choices that reflect a more compassionate society. What we choose to eat can empower not only our own health, but it can also empower the lives of others. So whether you eat to live or live to eat, Lauren's vast knowledge and experience offers a deeper insight in ways to illuminate your old thinking patterns on the selection of food and the repercussions of what you're eating and the danger it could do to you and others. So I welcome my guest, Lauren Ornelius. Hi, Lauren.
Hi, thanks so much for having me on the show.
Oh, well, welcome. It's very great to have you. I mean, it's such, you're starting to hear about it a little bit more, about the different, realms of, you know, social justice and people picketing, but that's towards the end of the segment. What I want you to do is be able to give a little bit more about your organization and what's its structure and its mission statement. What is it really wanting to do?
Sure. We're a vegan food justice organization, and our goal is to try and get people to recognize the power of their food choices and how their food choices impact living beings close by and far away. So we do this through different programs that we run. We encourage people who have access to healthy foods to go vegan, to not contribute to the suffering of non-human animals. As I'm sure many of your listeners know, animals who are raised for food are treated in horrible ways, many of which have different parts of their bodies cut off in order to be raised in systems that seek to limit their movements, and ultimately are killed at the end of their lives in cruel practices. And we provide resource material to help people go vegan and stay vegan. We also, because we're encouraging people to eat more plant-based food, we also work to fight for the rights of farm workers who pick our produce. So we do this through supporting legislation and regulatory changes, but we also do on-hand work, such as school supply drives and food drives for the children of farm workers. We also work on access to healthy foods in communities of color and low-income communities, because there's a great rift in terms of access to healthy foods in this country and abroad, where eating healthy seems to be a privilege instead of a right. So we work with community organizations to expose the problems that are taking place, and then also to amplify the voices of those communities to make sure that their needs are being met and what best suits the needs for their community. We also encourage people not to support child labor and slavery in the chocolate industry by avoiding purchasing chocolate that is sourced from those areas. So we maintain a list of chocolates we do and don't recommend, which I know we'll speak about all of this, but those are basic areas of our work, really seeking to inform people who want to make more compassionate food choices and give them the tools to do so.
I mean, that's a big project. Lauren, what inspired you? How did you, as founder and, you know, as managing, you know, director, how did you, I mean, what was your inspiration?
Well, at a young age, I was, you know, I was from Texas. I live in California now, but I would often see cows in the fields, and my initial reaction was to not want to contribute to suffering. That's pretty much the overarching place where I've come from. And so when I was young, my mom told me that the chicken I was eating was a chicken, and I realized that I didn't want to be responsible for the death of an animal. I didn't want to be responsible for separating families by eating other family members. And as I got older, I learned more about what was happening in South Africa with apartheid, and I was involved in the Great Boycott in the 1980s organized by the United Farm Workers. And so I was able to see different ways in which our food can be used as a tool to create positive change in the world. There are so many things going on that I couldn't control, that I couldn't stop, that I felt were grave injustices. But with my food choices, I realized that I could wield some power and I could make decisions not to participate in things I didn't believe in. And so as I got older, I was primarily involved in the animal rights movement. And then I spoke at the World Social Forum in 2006, which took place in Caracas, Venezuela. And I was moved by all the different issues that I cared about, labor issues, water rights, immigration issues, animal issues, and, you know, everything that I cared about was being discussed there, and people who were being the most impacted were also participating. And I realized that I wanted to start an organization that could combine all of these issues that I cared about, human and non-human animals. And so I started Food Empowerment Project as a way to inform people about things that were going on in the world and to try and figure out together ways that we could make the world a better place.
And didn't you just celebrate your 8th birthday anniversary?
We did.
Congratulations.
Thank you, yes.
Wow, that's
Thank
amazing.
You. Our 8th birthday was on Friday, and the first ever celebration we had for our anniversary was this past Saturday. We're primarily a volunteer-driven organization. Nobody makes a salary. We're trying to change that. So that's what part of the celebration was about. It was about helping us to be able to grow so that we can carry on more projects.
Well, you know, you mentioned, like, vegan. A lot of people get vegan and vegetarian confused. Could you explain to the audience what's different?
Sure. Vegetarianism is primarily people who no longer consume animals, as in pigs and chickens and cows, turkeys and other animals, but they might still eat eggs and consume dairy products. Vegans really strive to not participate in any form of exploitation or suffering of animals. So we also don't consume milk that comes from a cow or a goat, nor do we consume eggs. But we also don't wear animal products. We don't buy products that are tested on animals. And we certainly don't support industries such as SeaWorld that exploit animals.
Wow. I read an article in Research in Psychology Today. They said, like, the relapse of people that are vegans to going back to meat products is that the number one reason is that there's four reasons. They said that it's too much of a hassle, that they feel like they're getting it. You know, society is looking strange at them, and that their body does actually go ahead and crave the meat byproduct, you know, the products that are made from that.
Mm-hmm.
Do you find that you have a lot of people ever come back to you and say they had these issues?
Well, I mean, first of all, I went vegan in the 80s in Texas, and I was in high school. So it's always a little bit hard for me to hear people in 2015 discussing how difficult it is. Obviously, in certain places of the country, it would be, but in the bigger cities, it certainly is not that difficult to find health food stores carrying healthy foods. But most people who I hear go back to consuming animal products aren't the ones necessarily making this decision for ethical reasons. A lot of them are interested in it because it's a fad, or maybe they're trying to lose weight, or it's some type of diet to them, versus something that many of us hold as values, which is a part of our being, that you don't go back to something like that simply because of the suffering involved. There's a lot of people who love the taste of meat, but who don't eat it because they don't want to participate in the suffering of another being. And those people aren't going to go back as much as maybe somebody who thought they might lose weight if they try veganism. That's not to say that people don't have a hard time with veganism ever. We have our food chain newsletter that we mail out to people one issue every month for a year for free to help them stick with it, because more than not, people have a hard time figuring out how they do it. You know, it's not just a matter of simply leaving, you know, something off your plate. It's a matter of adding, you know, more nutritious fruits or vegetables on, or some type of meat protein, meaning non-animal protein. You know, just adding tofu or other types of, you know, foods like that, so you don't end up being hungry. That, you know, you can't just leave one piece off your plate.
It seems like it's also a commitment. It's somebody that you have to commit that this is what I want to do. These are the reasons why I want to do it, for whether it's for my health or, like you just said, the cruelty, and they don't want to be, you know, participant to that. But you'd have to be really committed, I would imagine.
I think so. And I think that, you know, a lot of people just don't really know what's happening to animals who are raised and killed for food. They don't understand that many birds are boiled alive in the slaughterhouses. They don't have a good understanding of how much cruelty is truly inflicted, and the fact that they can just not eat those products and not participate in one form of suffering. And there's a lot of things that people stick to because of their ethics. And, you know, this is just another one that, you know, the more we can inform people about, the more we feel they'll stick with us.
Well, we're getting ready to go to break, but when I want to come back, on your website, you had the top 10 eating tips on how to go vegan. And I'd like to hear it when we come back, but real fast, like I was still trying to ask you before, I guess I didn't really illuminate the question. It's like, is this like a lightning bolt and all aha moment, or you have to go out and teach people, or do they come to you? So when we come back from a break, if you don't mind answering those questions, that would appreciate it, Lauren.
Sure.
Okay, thank you, Lauren. We'll be right back.
Thank you.
It's your world. Motivate, change, succeed. VoiceAmericaEmpowerment.com.
Have you ever noticed that sometimes life just feels easier, especially when judgment of you or anyone else ceases to exist? What if you could function from that space all the time? What if gratitude is the key? Every time you are grateful for someone or something, a new universe opens up. What difference can you create in your life and the world from the energy, space, and consciousness of gratitude? Join us on Access Consciousness Presents Beyond Saying Thank You every Tuesday at 12 noon Pacific Time on the Voice America Empowerment Channel.
Are you a business innovator, or are you just sitting on the sidelines? Tune in every week for Coffee Break with Game Changers, presented by SAP. Host Bonnie D. Graham talks to a cross-section of the movers and shakers who are leading by example. They will share best practices and innovative ideas to keep you thinking and moving along with the best. Join us for Coffee Break with Game Changers, presented by SAP, Wednesday mornings at 11 a.m. Eastern Time, 8 a.m. Pacific Time on the Voice America Business Channel.
Have you friended us on Facebook yet?
Why not?
Just go to facebook.com/Voice America or search for the keywords Voice America. Once you are part of our Facebook network, you'll receive daily messages about what's happening with our shows, this week's featured guests, and new happenings at the Voice America Talk Radio Network. And you can add your voice to the always active discussions on our wall. Just go to facebook.com/Voice America or search for Voice America.
It's your world. Motivate, change, succeed. VoiceAmericaEmpowerment.com.
This is From the Boardroom to the Bedroom, the Protocol Praxis with Suzanne Z. Pedro. To reach the show today, give us a call at 1-888-346-9141. That's 1-888-346-9141. You can also send us an email anytime to protocolpraxis@gmail.com. Now, back to the show.
Hi, everybody. We're back with Lauren Ornelius, and she is the Food Empowerment Project's founder and serves as a group executive director. In cooperation with activists all across the country, she worked and achieved corporate changes within Whole Foods Market, Trader Joe's, Pier 1, just to mention a few. So I'd like to welcome Lauren back. Welcome back, Lauren.
Thank you.
Oh, great. We were talking during the break, right before the break, too, about on your website about the top 10 eating tips to go vegan. And if somebody came to you, and I'm sure there's a process. I mean, one day they don't just, like I said to you, discard all their meat and their leather belts. I mean, what would you, if somebody's interested in knowing how does the process begin?
I think it's going to be, and it's a great question, but I think it's going to be different for everyone. And I think that's the key, is realizing in all of this is that people are going to come to learn about this issue and come from different perspectives, whether it be health, the environment, or not wanting to participate in cruelty to animals, that people will come to, you know, the idea or the concept of veganism. And I think that the same thing will happen. It's going to be different how they go about it. I know when I went vegetarian initially when I was 5, and it wasn't until, you know, and I wasn't able to stick with it, but wasn't again until I was in high school that I went vegan. And my process was pretty immediate. I was able to see what was happening to animals raised for food. I was able to see how baby male chicks were completely discarded and thrown in plastic bags and suffocated for the egg industry. And the more I learned, I didn't want to participate in it at all. So I completely, you know, I was already vegetarian, but I completely stopped eating eggs and consuming dairy products. And I gave away, my sisters were happy to take any of my leather products that I had. So I was able to immediately just decide, you know, how can I wear this stuff when I know what happened to these animals? How can I continue to consume it? So it was pretty immediate for me to want to just, you know, rid myself of any participation in that type of cruelty. But other people are different. Some people will choose to continue, you know, eat what they have in their fridge or continue to wear leather until, you know, that pair of shoes wears out and then not buy anymore. But I think that everybody goes about it differently. One of the things that's always helpful is, you know, kind of learning to shop again, learning how to do your meal plans again. We have information on our website at foodispower.org, but anybody can Google like vegan meal plans or vegan breakfast and get an idea for different meal plans that they can eat. I mean, a lot of people don't realize how much of their food maybe is already vegan. If they eat oatmeal in the morning, if they have toast, if they have peanut butter and jelly, if they have, you know, just sesame bagel or blueberry bagel, but a lot of this stuff may already be vegan. And it's just a matter of, you know, looking up new products, finding, eating, really a lot of people will switch to eating more healthier, you know. Well, a bonus of going vegan for those of us who do it for ethical reasons is that we end up, for the most part, being healthier. We eat more whole fruits and vegetables than maybe people do typically in the United States.
Well, you mentioned, you know, like the vegetables and the fruits, but you also have ethical concerns about the workers, the farmers. You know, how are they treated? Are they, you know, mistreated and abused? Isn't that part of the philosophy or the ethical concerns?
Absolutely. And that's why we do our best to make sure that we advocate for those farm workers in the field. When you have strawberry pickers in the state of California whose average lifespan is 49 years old, we hold a responsibility to make sure that we change that system. We change a system that believes it's okay to not pay these workers living wages, that we feel it's okay for women to be sexually abused in the fields, that we make sure that we're fighting for them to have a roof over their heads. Many farm workers don't make enough money not only to eat the foods that they're picking, but also to have a roof over their heads. Many live in their trucks and cardboard boxes along the creeks and the rivers, and we have a responsibility to make sure. I mean, nobody can do without fruits and vegetables. It's part of being healthy. It's what we need to be healthy individuals, and so we have a responsibility to make sure that we defend their rights. And we do everything we can to make sure that they're not invisible, that we recognize them, we recognize their plight, and we speak out for them as much as we can.
Well, how is a consumer able to know, to have this information at hand, like how, you know, this was imported from somewhere that was there child abuse involved or some kind of, you know, sex slave trade or whatever like that.
Right.
Where do you find that information to be an informed consumer for vegans?
It's not easy. You know, I mean, I think that sometimes when I talk about this issue, I think about how in some ways, you know, the veganism is the easy part. I can look at a box of ingredients and see if there's cheese or eggs in it, or I can skip, you know, something that has bacon in it. But when it comes to buying produce, it's a lot more difficult because it isn't that easy to know. I can't just know, you know, when I'm buying a fruit or vegetable all the time if the workers were treated better. The Coalition of Immokalee Workers in Florida has been working on a certification that they have on tomatoes, and they're looking to put it on other products. So that is hopefully coming in the near future, but it isn't as easy. With chocolate, which is one of the areas that we focus on, we've tried to make it easier for consumers, but for the most part, you can't pick up a bar of chocolate and know anything about it other than what they want you to know, and that's typically just the ingredients.
Will you tell our listeners about your familiarity with Clif Bar and the social responsibilities? I mentioned chocolate in the beginning of my intro, and you mentioned chocolate, but I don't think people know what is behind chocolate that makes it so controversial.
Yeah, and most people don't know. I mean, it's going to take work for us to be more informed about what's happening, but the more we're informed, the more we can help create change, and that's why the old notion, knowledge is power, and it is. And when you look at the chocolate industry, what's happening in Western Africa is that you have children from ages 7 years old who are out working in the cacao fields using dangerous equipment called machetes to cut these cacao pods out, and they're, you know, getting cuts and hurting themselves. You also have them being beaten if they're not working fast enough. And worse, you have some children who are locked in overnight as a means to keep them working in the industry, to keep them working in the fields. And all of this is for chocolate. So the packaging isn't going to tell us what they're doing to the children. And so what we've tried to do is we've tried to make it easier for people from the Department of Labor in the United States to documentaries. They've documented the worst forms of child labor, including slavery, taking place in areas in Western Africa. So except for a very few exceptions where worker cooperatives are owning the field, the crops, we don't recommend people sourcing and buying chocolate from areas where the worst forms of child labor are taking place. So our list indicates the chocolates that we recommend and the ones we don't recommend. And so for a long time, what we do is we contact the companies and we ask them, where are they sourcing their cacao from? Where are they sourcing their chocolate from? And Clif Bar was a company that refused to disclose to us where their chocolate was coming from. Some companies still are on our list under will not disclose. They consider it proprietary about where their chocolate comes from. But Yeah, it's important to recognize we're not even asking for the name or the place that they're getting the chocolate from. We're not even asking for the city or the state. All we're asking is country of origin, and yet these companies are telling us that it's proprietary information.
Wow.
And, yeah, Clif Bar fell in that category until last December when we were getting ready to deliver 83,000 signatures on a petition asking for this information. We were going to be delivering it on Human Rights Day on December 10th at their office in Northern California. And on December 2nd, they revealed to us where they were sourcing their chocolate from. So they are sourcing from Western Africa, so we do not recommend them, but we at least are pleased that they recognize that consumers have a right to know and they should be forthcoming with this information.
Is that like Guyana and the Ivory Coast around up that area with the...
Exactly. The Ivory Coast being one of the areas where it's most prevalent. That's where a lot of the problems have been documented.
I guess you made a lot of, you know, enemies along the way, I can imagine. I mean, with these corporations, you know, right in their face. But let me ask you this, like the Whole Foods, all these, the ones, I'm not saying them per se, but do they actually sell or do they check, like, where, I mean, if, you know, there's human rights violations, do they, the company itself, does it do that or... They just accept it on the merit of the of you know who they're purchasing it from.
Well, I think the company, you know, again, and I can't speak for Whole Foods, who I do have a positive relationship with, even though I campaigned against them for 4 years. But companies probably like Whole Foods and Trader Joe's and some of these other big grocery store chains, they themselves might look into their supplier of the chocolate, but it doesn't mean they're looking into the suppliers of the companies whose chocolate they sell, if you know what I mean. So, like, they may have their own name brands, but it doesn't mean, so Safeway or Trader Joe's might have their own name brand chocolate, but it doesn't mean they're not going to source from, you know, at least in the case of Safeway, they might still source, you know, Hershey's, or Kroger might have their own chocolate, but they still sell Hershey, which has a proven track record of supporting, legally. They have been found, I guess there's a lawsuit regarding former slaves who have escaped who have suing companies like Hershey.
Wow, and I think you mentioned that the FDA does get involved. Is in the standpoint of safety, or I'm trying to figure what is there.
Yes. So, I mean, when it comes to importation, because cacao, the only U.S. state that cacao for chocolate is actually grown in is Hawaii. And none of these abuses have been found in Hawaii. So all the other chocolate is really coming from overseas or abroad. But organic is probably the only certification that I know that is put on chocolate. And, yeah, again, they're not interested in the conditions of the workers. They're concerned with if agricultural chemicals were used or not.
Wow. We're getting ready to go to break, but before anybody takes another bite of chocolate, we'll be back with Lauren. Thank you.
Build your better business. Achieve that goal. Make good on that resolution. The Voice America Empowerment Channel. It's your world. Motivate, change, succeed.
What sets apart VoiceAmerica.tv from the other video content providers on the internet? Choice and flexibility means that you can host your video content live or on demand on the main VoiceAmerica.tv channels through your own branded media player or your own private TV channel. We support multiple media formats, so all of your video content can be in one place. We offer a number of advertising and video packages. For more information, visit VoiceAmerica.tv. If you think you've seen online TV like this before, let us surprise you.
Are you ready to move to your next level? Listen for Empowering Women, Transforming Lives with host Rebecca Hall Greider. Each show will focus on a central topic with discussion, guests, and your questions being featured. Our show is perfect for women who feel a call in their heart to step out in a bigger, more powerful way in their life. and just need some encouragement, inspiration, and practical steps to support them on their journey. Empowering Women, Transforming Lives can be heard live every Wednesday at 2 p.m. Pacific Time, 5 p.m. Eastern Time on Voice America Empowerment.
Build a better business. Achieve that goal. Make good on that resolution. The Voice America Empowerment Channel. It's your world. Motivate, change, succeed.
This is From the Boardroom to the Bedroom, the Protocol Praxis with Suzanne Z. Pedro. To reach the show today, give us a call at 1-888-346-9141. That's 1-888-346-9141. You can also send us an email anytime to protocolpraxis@gmail.com. Now, back to the show.
Hi, we're back with Lauren Ornelius, and she is the Food Empowerment Project's founder. Not only that, Lauren has been active in the animal rights movement for over 20 years. And I can tell you, Lauren, you must have saved a lot of, you know, put a lot of people in their place to take care of these animals. So welcome back, Lauren.
Thank you.
Talking about the animals, I've read this little opposition on animals in industrial agriculture. But I know you have seen a lot of this suffering face to face. You can gently tell the audience what I mean it must have floored you.
I'm the type of person who, when I first saw these videos when I was in high school, I thought, you know, I could never do that kind of stuff, because I feel so emotionally fragile with suffering. And I eventually had to get in a position where I had to do these things in order to be able to show people what was happening. And so some of the first investigations that I did were of duck factory farms, where I saw ducks who were still so young, they didn't even have their feathers coming out yet, who had fallen over. They put these types of wire flooring next to the water troughs for the ducks. And this little duck had fallen over and his wings had gotten caught. And, you know, a lot of these ducks, just like chickens who are raised for food, their bodies grow so fast that their legs can't keep up with it necessarily. So they fall over backwards. And many of them die in this way because they can't ever right themselves to get to food or water. I investigated pig farms, and to some degree, those were some of the hardest ones that I still have nightmares about, because of the sheer boredom of that these incredibly, you know, sensitive animals and very intelligent animals, where the mother pigs were kept in. So basically, a mama pig, when she's pregnant, is put in what's called a gestation crate. And some states in the U.S. have banned it, and some places in the EU have banned it as well. But these are crates so small where the mother pigs are kept when they're pregnant that they can't take a free step, and they can't even turn around. And when the mom is about to give birth to her piglet, she's put in another crate so small she can't take a free step or turn around. And she's moved back and, yeah, she's moved back and forth between these two crates for about 4 years until she's no longer, you know, having as many piglets, and then she's eventually slaughtered. But to see, you know, these animals just in such tight confinement. I mean, to imagine the frustration of a being who can't even turn around, can't even move freely, is just unbearable. They would constantly hit their noses against the grates of the crates that they were in. And I documented a pig who actually died right in front of me. He had a huge ulceration on his stomach, and he's standing there, and eventually he falls over on his side, and slowly you just see his breathing stop.
Oh, gosh. Okay, let me ask you this.
I can tell more stories.
I mean, I'm sitting here crying almost. I mean, that's, oh, no. It's too hard to hear. But, I mean, you have to hear it. You have to discuss it, or else people think, like, you know, like, oh, it's, everything's humanely taken care of, and it's, Unfortunately, it's not. So,
no,
but
it's not.
I wanted to ask you, too, and the way that animals are treated also has, what are the environmental consequences?
Well, speaking of pig farms, many pig farms in North Carolina are located in primarily black communities where residents who live there are forced to live with the stench of these facilities, which are unbearable. They are unable to open their windows because of the smell. Flies are constantly flying around. They suffer from nosebleeds and headaches from living near these facilities. And their property value is pretty much worthless because no one's going to want to move into these areas. And the same out here in California in the Central Valley, where you have predominantly Latino communities living near these dairies and have incredibly high rates of asthma. And it's a form of environmental justice where communities of color are disproportionately impacted by these negative pollutants of factory farms because no one really wants to live near these. And so these are communities who are often seen as not having a voice, although they do. And that's where they locate these facilities.
Well, let me ask, the EPA, they don't come in and regulate like they do for other things, the amount of the smell, the different things like that, because the social economic level that it's like they just turn the other cheek.
Yeah, I think basically that's a lot what happens, and it usually takes lawsuits such as those done by the Center on Race, Poverty, and the Environment to really help these communities stand up for themselves and be protected. The EPA is not doing a good enough job for these communities. And, you know, even here where I am in Sonoma County, we have a slaughterhouse that's using massive amounts of water every day, even though we're in a drought. And so you don't, you know, somehow these facilities seem to be, you know, given a free pass when it comes to polluting our environment and wasting our natural resources.
Well, I guess they have a big lobby group. To protect them, because that's amazing. I mean, where they doing the shower heads in California to make sure you get fined if you overuse too much water, but yet they conceding and allowing these other, you know, death cultures to survive.
Yep, absolutely.
Gosh, my goodness. What are some of the other major food production issues that our listeners should be aware of? This is a way to alert everybody.
Yeah, I mean, I think that, you know, definitely, you know, we encourage people to think about workers in general. I mean, obviously animals in terms of when it comes to, you know, consuming animal products, but workers in general who are often not seen in our food system. You know, we have information, as you noted, on restaurant workers on our website. But we also have information on bananas and coffee and how these two are commodity products where people who live in these countries are not being treated right. They're not being paid as they should be paid. And, you know, we just think that people need to be more aware and more thoughtful, about where their food is coming from. And, you know, the more we can get information on where it's coming from in terms of country and origin, then it's easier for us to inform ourselves about how people are being treated. And we have a responsibility to make sure that workers are treated with dignity, paid living wages. Living wages is very, you know, is getting a lot of attention right now, which we're very happy about. But restaurant workers, fast food workers all deserve to have a living wage.
But how can a consumer, knowing that they're getting something from another country, how can they impact that company to do the right thing other than just boycott it? Or is there other ways to do that?
Definitely. I mean, we, you know, like to say our individual voices and our, you know, our individual choices and our collective voices can have a lot of impact. And so as an individual, we can make decisions to stay away from products and foods that cause harm and suffering to others. But it's very important that we make sure that the corporations know why you're not buying their product anymore. And participate in campaigns such as the Coalition of Immokalee Workers, which has a campaign right now against Publix and Wendy's for their unwillingness to pay one penny more per pound for the tomatoes that the farm workers are picking. So, you know, to let these corporations know, we're not going to shop at your stores. This is why, and to add their voices to these other efforts that are going on, just like we needed from our Cliff Bar campaign. It was one thing to get people not to buy their products. It was another thing to get them to have their voices join with thousands of other individuals and demand transparency and demand that changes be made.
Well, you know, it seems like one of my statistics that I got from your website was that the fast food industry has grown since 1907 from $6 billion to this year to $170 billion. That must just, for your organization, when you see numbers like that, and then realizing all the implications between social justice, gender inequality, because they can get people to work cheap, they can get the products cheap, you know, everything. What do you do? I mean,
it's a really good point. It's just very hard to see the growth. I think that there's a number of things we can do. I mean, as an organization, you know, there's no denying that there are more fast food and liquor stores in certain areas, primarily communities of color and low-income communities whose community is impacted with higher rates of diabetes and health-related problems due to, you know, lack of access to healthy foods and too much of this fast food. And one of the ways we actually encourage people to help with this effort is to demand living wages for workers. The more people have access to more money, the easier it's going to be for them to buy healthier foods and skip something like McDonald's and instead be able to afford broccoli, kale, and other, you know, fruits and vegetables that are better for their health. But there's this is a stark problem, not just in the United States, but globally, where you have this influx of fast food coming in and less people having access to healthy foods. And it's a complicated issue. Again, it's not just as something as simple as don't do this and do that. It's a matter of really empowering these communities who are living in these areas and, you know, giving them the money that they need to create positive change. I mean, we'd like to see more cooperatives in these communities versus, say, Walmart coming in where the money's going to go back to Arkansas. We'd rather cooperative grocery stores be started in these communities where the money stays in the community and helps the people.
That's a good point, cooperative, because you also mentioned, or the nomenclature, whatever it is, food desert. Before we go to break, we have 2 minutes. Can you explain what a food desert is?
Sure. Food deserts is a definition by the USDA, which talks about the lack of access to healthy foods due to proximity. So communities of color that in order to gain access by going to a grocery store might have to take 2 buses just to get fresh tomatoes, that it's a matter of proximity to accessing the healthy food. So these areas that have higher prevalence of fast food and liquor stores are considered a desert in the sense that there's no, there isn't a lot of fresh produce in these areas.
And it's all because of their socioeconomic climate and not because they don't want it.
Or exactly.
It's access, so they've been denied access. So, well, Lauren, we're getting ready to go to break, and we'll be right back with Lauren O'Nelius. Thank you.
Success starts here. VoiceAmericaEmpowerment.com. It's your world.
Like so many others, do you put on a game face to the world? The stress of home life, work life, and personal life converge on us on practically a daily basis. Yet, so rarely do we let others see our real selves. And we carry on like we don't have a single problem. We need to connect and to find out we're not alone. Tune into Stories from the Heart of Leadership with host Shamin Sadek to find out not only what's been created, but the story behind it. Listen live every Monday at 2 p.m. Eastern Time, 11 a.m. Pacific, on the Voice America Empowerment Channel.
Master your reality and manifest your desires effortlessly. Listen to The Trivedi Effect to find out how raising your level of consciousness can totally transform every aspect of your life. Hosted by Mahendra Kumar Trivedi with Trivedi Master Alice Branton, our program will spotlight the nearly 4,000 documented scientific studies that have proven the transformational impact of this energy extends beyond humans to all living and even non-living matter. Tune in Mondays at 1 p.m. Pacific on the Voice America Empowerment Channel or Saturdays at 9 a.m. Pacific on the Voice America Seventh Wave Channel.
Become a member of VoiceAmerica.com. It's easy and best of all, it's free. Start out by going to our homepage or any of our channels and click register at the top. Once you've created an account and signed in, you can create your own custom library, opt into our newsletter, search by show, host, guest, or topic of interest, or browse millions of hours of content across all of our Voice America radio channels. Membership gets you more. Visit VoiceAmerica.com today to get started and tailor the listening experience to your taste.
Follow us on Twitter for more great ideas at Voice America Empowerment.
This is From the Boardroom to the Bedroom, the Protocol Praxis with Suzanne Z. Pedro. To reach the show today, give us a call at 1-888-346-9141. That's 1-888-346-9141. You can also send us an email anytime to protocolpraxis@gmail.com. Now, back to the show.
Hi, we're back with Lauren Onelius, again with the Food Empowerment Project, founder and serves as the group executive director. But Lauren is also the former executive director of Viva USA, a national nonprofit vegan advocacy organization. Welcome back, Lauren.
Thank you so much.
Oh, thank you. We were talking about how it's so hard that these corporations, they have these big lobbyists and, I mean, money speaks. And, you know, you're going up some really big, you know, corporate names. How are you able to get your funding?
It's not easy. we have not only do we have a wide mission, we also want to be very careful to not have any conflicts of interest. So we primarily rely on individual donors who understand the connection of these issues and why they're so important. But it is just because a company might make a vegan product doesn't mean that their chocolate is sourced from, you know, an area that we are comfortable with. So we have to be pretty careful on who we can accept money from. So individual donors, as of this point, is our primary source of funding.
Oh, okay. Do you hold rally? I mean, how can people become involved?
Sure. We have our two websites. We have foodispower.org, and we also have veganmexicanfood.com, and we're on social media on Facebook and Twitter. And we do actually have monthly protests in Sonoma County at a chicken slaughterhouse, which is owned by Purdue. And just to bear witness to the fact that animals, about 50,000 chickens are being killed there every day. So we do bear witness there. We do a lot of tabling events. We're trying to get, right now, since we're based on the West Coast, we do have some volunteers in Boston, but we're trying to get more of a overarching spread over to the East Coast. But we do tabling, and I speak all over the country, and in fact have been asked to speak in different places around the world. So that's another way we get the word out about our work.
And I think FVP, correct me if I'm wrong, they also support, encourage the donation of food. You encourage donating food that is, right, vegan. And your website, oh my gosh, they even give a list of suggestions of the different types of food to donate. Like, can you give the audience some examples of some good things that you would say would be perfect for donation?
Absolutely. And one of the things we try to do with that list is, you know, remind people that they're donating food to help people. And sometimes people see donations of food as something to make themselves feel good when it's really supposed to be helping somebody else. And so one of the best things they can do is contact their local food bank and find out what the food bank needs and what the food bank can actually take. And also to make sure that the food that they're donating is culturally appropriate to the needs of that food bank that they're giving to. So some foods, you know, include actually soy milk, almond milk. A lot of communities of color are lactose intolerant or can't digest lactose, so it's great to get those dairy alternatives in there. Just cereals, just, you know, things like that. Thinking of, like, kids, if they have kids, what would be helpful for them to take to school with them, maybe juice packs, you know, whole beans, tortillas, you know, depending on the community. But those types of foods are, you know, just some basic staples that that the people need as well. But the most important thing is just really find out from the food bank what types of foods would be best.
Do vegans have a lot of issue with a lot of intake of sugar?
Oh, that's a good question. We certainly can. There's lots of delicious vegan donuts out there. But I don't know that we have any more than, say, anybody else would. I know that we'd be getting sugar from the fruits that we eat, as well as probably if we eat cookies and donuts. But I don't know that we have any higher incidences of sugar intake than anybody else normally would.
Just a question. I mentioned coming back that you were executive director of Viva USA. A lot of people are not familiar with that, and I'd like, you know, to be able to share with that.
Sure. Viva is an organization based in England, and I ran the USA chapter where we promoted veganism, and I did investigations of factory farms and slaughterhouses. And with these investigations, I basically targeted corporations to try and make changes. So we did investigations of dairy farms where we found no matter how big or how small the farm was, the baby calf was always taken away from his or her mother, sometimes immediately after birth. The moms will always fight to be with their babies, so a lot of times they take them away. So the moms are disoriented, and they don't fight so hard to be with their babies. And so we worked to try to get Baskin-Robbins and Ben & Jerry's to carry vegan ice cream, which they do not still, but that was one of our campaigns. And with my duck investigations that I mentioned earlier, we were able to get Trader Joe's to stop carrying all duck meat and Pier 1 Imports to stop using feathers in their products because of the cruelties we uncovered in the duck industry.
And what about you with Viva USA? Didn't you do something with the whole, you made some kind of changes within the Whole Foods market?
Yes, we targeted Whole Foods market as well for their sale of duck meat from the farms that we investigated and ran a four-year campaign against them for this. And eventually it culminated in the co-founder of Whole Foods market and I connecting via email, and after discussing things and not agreeing, he ended up emailing me several months later, letting me know that he'd done some reading and that he had decided to go vegan and that he wanted some help changing the standards at Whole Foods Market. So he and I are actually still friends to this day, and he's still a vegan. And, it's an interesting story to come out of one of my campaign targets.
Wow, that's amazing. I mean, I'm sure your corporation, your foundation does a lot of, you know, really, but that's a Whole Foods market to get him to be a vegan. Like, kudos to you. I love it. And then, you know, social justice, like gender inequality. I read on your website about the one of the things is the low wages and tipping, and I think women make up 66% of the workers, where 93 up echelon, like chefs, they there, and most of them, the women, they on welfare, food stamps, and unfortunately, even though it's brought to the forefront, it's talking about in the news and the media that it's just all workers, but it seems to have a real disparity with women being the main dominant, and they have to be the caretaker of the family, usually one member and stuff like that. So what is your take on, I mean...
Yeah, I mean, you're absolutely right. It's majority are women, and women are also, a lot of them have children. A lot of them are single parents, as my mom was. And they're the ones working these low-wage jobs, many of which experience sexual harassment. And, you know, it's an inequity that's going on that, you know, what sounds like some federal legislation has been introduced to increase wages, but there's always more that we can do. I mean,
Lauren, thank you so much. We're almost out of time. We have just a short second. How can people get to your site and, you know, please have the floor?
Sure. Our website is foodispower.org, and we have all of this information on our website, more things that people can do, and we just hope people will get involved and look at their food choices as a tool to create positive change in the world.
Well, thank you for being my guest, Lauren Onelius. And you know what?
Pleasure.
You know, you opened my eyes, and I hope you opened a lot of my guests. So thank you for being with us today.
Thank
I appreciate
you so much.
It.
It's been a pleasure.
Okay, thank you. We're going out. Bye.
Thank you for tuning in this week. Your host, Suzanne Z. Pedro, will be back again next Tuesday at 1 p.m. Pacific Time, 4 p.m. Eastern Time, for another edition of From the Boardroom to the Bedroom, the Protocol Praxis. We hope you'll join us as well.